The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
Sports Talk 1240, Sunday evening, August 28th. Eric Getzoff here with Kyle Gelling. Behind the glass is Brian Graves and the executive producer, Rob Kowal. We'll take you up until 10 o'clock this evening. We got Tom Rock, who covers the New York Giants for Newsday, coming on at 9:10. Feel free to give a call into the show. Number is 631-888-8811. Once again, 631-888-8811. I'll shut up for a little bit, and I'll introduce my co-host, Kyle. How's it going?
It's going good. Glad to be back. Thanks for having me back on here.
Absolutely.
Ready to talk some Mets baseball. I thought we were out of it there for a little while, but they seem to be making a resurgence. I'm more than excited to say that the Mets in August have been a pleasure to watch.
They have been. It's the second consecutive year they've been doing this in August. My question to you is, are the Mets delaying the inevitable, or do the Mets really have a chance? Because they're only 2.5 out, and, you know, they're playing pretty good baseball.
I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. I think it's, if they do make a run here, it's going to be more so that the other teams collapse and they capitalize on it, rather than they go on a huge run here, because they got to put together a record well over 500 if the other teams are winning.
Yeah, and I think that the Mets can do it. But the thing is, everyone has to stay healthy. And it seems that this entire season, it's been the same storyline every single week. The Mets go on a run, a good player gets injured. So you saw today what happened as Azdrubal Cabrera went down, and Cespedes and Neil Walker didn't play, and they only scored one run. So if they can stay healthy, I think they can do it. But that's a big question, because look at this entire season where they've had so many injuries. I don't think they're going to stay healthy, therefore I think the Mets are going to fall short.
I agree with you there. I don't know what team it's going to be. I'd hate to say it's the Cardinals, just because it seems like broken record saying it's going to be the Cardinals again. I'd like to see if it's not the Mets. You hate in division to see another team go instead of you, but the Marlins are an exciting young team. They were supposed to be on the up and up last season, and they fell short, so they're kind of the predictions are coming to fruition this season for them. So we'll see. I'd like it to be the Mets, but like you said, I mean, Mats is on again, off again. You got DeGrom skipping a start. They have Montero going the next time in the rotation. So it just doesn't seem like it's gonna match up for them this year.
And it's been such a weird season, too, because you figured going into the season, the Mets' strong point was their starting pitching. And Matt Harvey had a terrible season, whatever the reason was. Syndergaard's been good, but there's been some times, you know, he had a month stretch where he wasn't great. Jacob deGrom, his last two starts have been abysmal. Steven Matz, here and there, hasn't been that good. It's almost been like the most consistent pitcher this year has been Bartolo Colon. It's really how it's been.
You know, I'd love to see them re-sign him again next year if he's willing to stay in New York. I mean, he likes that leadership role in the clubhouse. He's willing to go to the bullpen if need be. Why not? I mean, if he's gonna throw strikes and his fastball's still gonna move the way it's moving, I mean, I don't see a reason to get rid of him. I feel like they would lose him rather than get rid of him at
absolutely
this point.
And he has an ERA, I think it's about 3.50, but the thing with Colon is that he is such an innings eater. I mean, he'll go out there, he'll average maybe like 6 1/3 every single time out there, and he stays healthy. So why not re-sign him if you can?
Yeah, and the fan base loves him. I mean, he's a folk hero at this point. He had two hits the other day. I mean, you never see them as excited for a player getting out as they are for when another player gets a hit. I mean, it doesn't matter. As long as he swings that bat, they go crazy for him.
It's unbelievable. Eric Getzoff and Kyle Gelling on Sports Talk 1240. Give a call in, 631-888-8811. We just talked about a couple disappointments for the Mets, and I want to bring one more, because this guy, he was the MVP of the Mets last season. I'm sure you all know who I'm talking about. It wasn't Yoenis Cespedes, because he came to the team starting on July 31st, but it was Curtis Granderson. The guy was great last year. He was clutch. He hit in the clutch, a lot of RBIs. He was great from the leadoff spot, a lot of, you know, he just, like, got the team going. This year, he's been terrible, and he hasn't had any, like, even like a two-week stretch where you kind of see something from him. My question to you is, and I would do this too, because you can't bench Bruce. You know, you got him in a big trade. You got to play him. That's the only way he's going to get out of his funk. I would go Cespedes, Bruce, Sid Granderson, and at this point, it's crazy to say, but I would play Diaz every single day.
I mean, you have Nimmo and Conforto just tearing it up in AAA. they shouldn't be down there at this point. They've proven that they're major league players and that they can come up. At least Conforto. I mean, Nimmo, we might need a little bit more time. Mm-hmm. But I think that by touching on Granderson, you're addressing a bigger issue, which is that the Mets have no direction in terms of their outfield play and who plays where. They don't have a full-time center fielder. You could say it's Lagares if he stays healthy, but Terry isn't willing to bat him unless there's certain pitchers throwing. So at what point do you realize that you have too many corner outfielders who are extremely mediocre at their position?
Not just that, but too many corner outfielders who are lefties.
Yes.
It's crazy.
Also.
You got Nimmo, you got Conforto, you have Granderson under contract for another year, and you have Bruce under contract for another year. Yeah. Plus, that's why I really think they need to bring back Cespedes, because you can't have every single outfielder and every single power bat in your lineup, because you also got to add in Lucas Duda, because he'll probably come back next year. I don't know if he should. That's a discussion for another day. But if he does, that's four lefties in your lineup already. So I think bringing back Cespedes is a huge point. And you make, like, a great point. They don't have a center fielder. Yoan Cespedes, in my opinion, should be a right fielder because he has a great arm, but he plays left. Curtis Granderson should play left because he has a bad arm, but he plays right. Trey Bruce isn't a good fielder. Where do you put him? It's almost just like they have a mishmash of guys, and they're kind of figuring it out on the fly, which I guess you can get away with it, but like in standard baseball, like if a general manager from the 1960s or 70s looked at this, he'd throw up, because that's not the way that, you know, it's not the way it really works.
You wouldn't have gone out and gotten those players in the first place. I mean, when they picked up Bruce, yeah, sure, like you need a shot of life if this guy comes in. He was leading the league at the time in RBIs, so how do you not sign a guy who has 80-plus RBIs at the All-Star break and, you know, for a team that can't score with runners in scoring position, can't get him in. So, yes, go out and get Bruce, but then I guess you worry about the fielding on the back end, and now that he's not hitting, it just looks like a big screw-up on management's part.
Yeah. So that brings us to another discussion. Tom Rock's going to come on the program in about 3 minutes to talk about the Giants. He covers the Giants for Newsday. We're going to talk, I'm sure, you know, we could talk Mets all day. We both worked for the Mets a while back. You got the World Series ring on right now.
Yeah, National League Championship.
I love it. With your name on it, too. That's awesome. So we could talk Mets all day, but one quick question I want to bring up while we have 3 minutes remaining is Yoan Cespedes made comments that he wanted to come back to the Mets next season. I guess you can, you know, there's a bunch of questions you can delve off that. One, do you think that he's going to come back? Two, do you believe him? Three, if he opts out, how much do the Mets offer him? What's your take on Cespedes' comments?
I think at the time when he said that he wanted to come back and he was going to, you know, fulfill that commitment to the Mets, I think that he believed himself when he said it. But when he goes and sits down and realizes who's going to be on the free agent market next season, The biggest name is Wilson Ramos. So if it's between him and Ramos and he opts out, he is in for a huge payday by some team. So just because of the lack of players out there, he'd be dumb not to.
And I also think over the past year and a half with the Mets, he's kind of proven to everybody else in Major League Baseball that he's a professional now. I think he came into the league and he was a little bit hot-headed with the Red Sox, with the Athletics, with the Tigers, and he was a little bit too lackadaisical, not professional enough. But he's done a really good job with the Mets, so that will only help his cause as well. But you know what? If he loves playing with the Mets organization, loves playing in New York, I'll take him back. And if he opts out, I would offer him $30 million because I think he's totally worth it, especially with the way Jay Bruce has been playing, who's been absolutely terrible.
Yeah, I mean, he gave them a huge discount after last season.
Yeah.
You can't expect that 2 years in a row. If he opts out, you got to pay him what he's worth at that point. He's proven to you that he is your player, and everyone was saying he must not be a good clubhouse guy. He gets moved around so often. From what I could see, all the players in the clubhouse love him.
They love him.
So, I mean, where's the downside there, really? Aside from the fact that he plays golf on his off days, or every day for that matter.
We both play baseball, too. We both had, you know, I had this, tell me if you had it, too, but there was always that one guy on your team, maybe it was you, I don't know. You told me you play baseball, but where, like, everyone on the team knew that if this guy was there, they had a much better chance of winning the game. It almost happened, like, on every single baseball team I played on, where if that guy was there and he was healthy, it was like, all right, we have a shot. It's really like that with the Mets and Cespedes, where when he's not playing, it's almost as if the Mets say, okay, we don't have our big guy here. You know, we have a much lesser chance of winning. But when he does play, it seems that, like, the entire lineup is so rejuvenated.
Yeah, the level of confidence in the hitters, just the way that they approach their at-bats, they're way more aggressive knowing that he's going to bail them out if they don't get a hit.
Yeah. It's It's absolutely crazy. So 9-10, Tom Rock should be coming on the program any second. Any single second right now. You know, we'll talk about the Giants real quick before Rock comes on. They open up the season in Dallas, and right now we actually do have Tom Rock on. Tom, thank you for taking the time out of your day. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. How are you?
Doing good, doing good. So I want to start off, we're going to, you know, obviously get into the Victor Cruz chat, talk, you know, a little bit Giants predictions. But one question that I have, and it has to do with the schedule. Three out of the past four seasons, the Giants have opened up in Dallas. Can the NFL one year have the Giants open up at home against the Cowboys?
Well, it's obviously a big ratings game, the Giants and Cowboys. And I think that the Jets, you know, sharing a stadium with the Giants, you got to kind of factor that in, but you know, to be honest, I think the Giants would rather close the season at home rather than open it at home. Those games at the end seem to be a lot more important a lot of times than the early season ones.
Yep, and let's hope that those games matter later in the season. So into the Victor Cruz chatter, can we expect to see peak Victor Cruz right away in Week One, or if not, what percent of the old Cruz can we expect to see from him only in Week One in Dallas?
Well, I think it's you know, probably a little bit too much to ask that, you know, peak Victor Cruz when you're thinking about the 2011 version of him, that he'll be on the field at all this year. It's you know, he's 2 years older. He hasn't played in 2 years. He's a different player. This is a different offense. You know, he's never played with Odell Beckham Jr. on the field either. So it's going to be he's going to be asked to do a couple of different things. You know, when he got hurt, he was the number one receiver on the team. Now he's going to be the number two, maybe even the number three receiver if Sterling Shepard catches on the way some of the Giants hope he does. So you know, to say that he's going to be you know, back to that form, I don't know. I think we'll get glimpses of it. I don't think we're going to see it over full games, and I don't think we're going to see it early on. I think it's going to be a lot closer to what we saw last night, where he catches one pass for a few yards and makes a nice move and maybe gets open for one catch here, one catch there. You know, not a lot of 100-yard games. I think he may have that in him in terms of once or twice a season, but I don't think he's going to be the Pro Bowl level receiver that he used to be.
Yeah, Tom, Kyle Gelling here. What practice protocols have you heard of that, you know, the Giants are putting in place here for Cruz to try to keep him on the field in top physical condition for the duration of the season this year?
Right. Well, they haven't done anything since he came back from the groin injury. He's been practicing fully and has you know, participated in every drill and all that. You know, I think it's no different than anybody else. They're going to monitor the injury and they're going to. He's going to listen to his body, and if he needs to slow down, he will, and if he needs to take a few reps off, he will. But other than that, he's full go. There's really no solid plan. You know, the plan early on in camp was to ease him into this season, into this preseason, and hopefully into the regular season. You know, just to take him step by step and slowly introduce him to activity and playing against opponents, and then get him into a game. All of that's taken place so far, so I think there's pretty much no limitations on Victor Cruz in terms of practicing right now.
That's good to hear. So they're going to hit the ground running with it. All right, good.
We got Tom Rock on the air right now on Sports Talk 1240. Tom, the Giants went 9 consecutive quarters without scoring before scoring in the third quarter against the Jets last night. Mm-hmm. How concerned are you with the Giants' offense this preseason?
Well, I think there's a lot to be concerned about because you're looking at the offensive line, and it's the same offensive line from last year, and you would hope that they would come back and really be able to gel and have that chemistry and that continuity, and it just doesn't seem like they're able to do anything. I know they're without Justin Pugh the last two games, and that certainly takes its toll on the unit as a whole, but, you know, these guys are not doing very well. They're not moving the ball. They're not moving the pile. They're not opening holes, and last night, glaringly, they were not protecting Eli Manning. He just doesn't have time for these plays to develop, the passing plays that they want to get to. Odell and Cruz and Shepard downfield, you know, there's just no time for Manning to be in the pocket and wait for those plays to develop. So that's a big issue for this team. They'd like to run the ball a lot better, obviously, than they did last year. so far in the preseason. They haven't been able to do that. I think those five players there are a big big area of concern for the Giants right now, because they didn't do anything in the offseason to bolster that group. They didn't draft any offensive linemen, and they didn't really sign any offensive linemen. They kind of said, well, we have the, you know, whatever they were last year, sixth or eighth ranked offense in the league, I forget what it was, and we had these offensive linemen, so we can do that again. And I think that's a pretty scary philosophy to take into a season, especially when you look at their depth, as we have with Justin Pugh missing a couple of games here, and you say, well, there's really no one behind them who can, you know, withstand the rigors of an NFL schedule.
Yeah, I think that especially with them opening up against Dallas and Romo now being out, it's going to be two teams trying to find themselves week one, and you hope that you hope the Giants can find themselves before Dallas does. I think they have a better shot at it. But what differences do you think we could expect to see here under the new regime? This is the first time we're seeing a Coughlin-less Giants in quite a while.
Yeah, first time in 12 years that somebody else is going to be calling the shots. So it's you know, so far the changes have been pretty subtle. You know, not a lot of you know, obviously the most glaring change so far was Eli not playing in the opening game of the preseason. I thought that was a pretty big departure from what Tom Coughlin used to do. We've seen a different practice schedule. The players are sleeping a lot more. They're practicing earlier in the day. They are having longer practices, but further apart, so there's more recovery time. I think they've done a pretty good job of limiting the soft tissue injuries. There's been a couple, but so far the Giants, knock on wood, haven't really lost anybody long term to any of these injuries. So it seems like all those things are working. They restructured their weight room. That was a big investment by the franchise as a whole this off season. They changed their weights lifting system and their fitness program. So there's been a lot of changes. Once they get on the field, how different is it going to be? Well, probably not a lot, because you get the same offensive coordinator as last year. He's just the head coach now. So it's his offense, and you have the same defensive coordinator as last year, and is a guy who's very familiar with the Giants fans, Steve Spagnuolo. So I don't think that those X's and O's are going to be necessarily different, but I think there's a lot more different in the background than there is in the foreground, and the Giants hope that changes what's been going on for the last couple of years, where they haven't made the playoffs and have had a couple of losing seasons in a row.
Tom, do you notice Eli's relationship? Has it changed at all with McAdoo so far, from a head coach to a quarterback relationship, instead of like a head coach to the offensive coordinator relationship?
Well, it's a pretty interesting dynamic, because you have Eli Manning, who's you know, the most established veteran player on the team, and this is really his first time dealing with a new head coach, so he's got to feel that out. He clearly wasn't comfortable with the decision not to play in the preseason opener. He wanted to play, and there was a little bit of a lack of communication between him and McAdoo there about what his responsibilities would be in that game against the Dolphins. Eli thought he was going to just be in street clothes for the night on the sideline, and it turned out, and he went through a workout during the day on his own, and then it turned out that he had to participate in the pregame warm-ups and go through all of those things. So basically, he got two workouts in one day that he wasn't planning on. I don't think that suited him very well. He was Eli Manning seems a little ticked off about that. But you know, there are a lot of other little things. But Eli's surrounded by people who he's very comfortable with. Mike Sullivan, he's known for almost a decade as an assistant coach here with the Giants in various roles. He used to be his quarterback's coach. Now he's the offensive coordinator. So I think there's a lot of familiarity there. They just have to figure out the new dynamics of their relationships. But the fact that they have pre-existing relationships, I think, makes it a lot easier to do that.
Yeah, I think that the pre-existing relationships are huge with players like this, especially with a veteran like Eli. They see their relationship, the young players coming in, and they understand how to work with the coach and what works for you might not be the same as what works for someone else. But if they see this veteran making a relationship like that, it's something that they can build off of as a team.
Right, but, these two guys, don't forget, are almost the same age. They're only 4 years apart. So, they're pretty much, they sort of have to speak the same language. They're at the same stage in their life, I guess you would say. So, they have that going for them too. That's always good.
Yeah. So, what do you think the Giant coaches are looking to see in this final preseason game? Is there any position battles here that they're trying to fill the final roster spots?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of the guys at the bottom of the roster. I think they're trying to figure out how many receivers they're going to keep, how many linebackers they're going to keep. JT Thomas playing pretty well in his first game the other night, last night. Certainly gives them a lot more numbers at the linebacker position. They still haven't figured out who their starting middle linebacker is going to be, whether it's going to be Jasper Brinkley or Kelton Shepard, and then Jonathan Casillas got hurt. He hurt his ribs in the game, so there's no saying how long he might be out for. So that's a pretty good position battle. They need to figure out what's going on at tight end with the blocking. They really haven't gotten very much production there. Matt Lacoste is going to have knee surgery. We learned today, and Will Johnson, who they brought in to sort of be the blocking tight end and fullback type of a player, he's missed 2 weeks with a burner in his neck. So that's certainly not a good sign. Will Ty had a really not a very good performance blocking. Obviously the Jets have a very strong defensive front, and it's hard for anybody to block them. But I think they would have liked to have seen a lot more from Will Ty in that game. And Ryan Mallett was, there's a couple of plays where he was up against Mo Wilkerson where I think he's still skating backwards trying to block him. So, there's a lot of areas where they need to improve. They need to get their running game going. They need to get their offensive line functioning a little bit. I think they'd like to get Victor Cruz another touch or two before the regular season starts. And, they're kind of running out of time here because the starters are only going to play about, maybe a quarter, if that. In Thursday's game, McAdoo hasn't laid out the exact schedule, but that's usually what happens. And they need to get all these things done in a very limited amount of time. So we'll see what they were able to scratch off their list before they head to Dallas on September 11th.
How surprised are you that the Giants, a team known for its great public image, is not cutting Josh Brown?
Well, I think that they believe that he didn't do anything wrong. I think they feel like they realize the accusations and that as John Mara said, they're pretty comfortable with re-signing him. So, I think that speaks volumes that they're an organization that you would expect would, if there was any sense of impropriety, that they would cut ties with him, and they're not. You have to look at it that way. Some people say, well, why aren't the Giants acting? And you have to say, well, why aren't the Giants acting? Because they obviously believe that there was nothing there to warrant either cutting or not re-signing Josh Brown. Domestic violence is obviously a very awful situation, and it can be tricky, and as John Mara said, very rarely is it black and white, and these things happen in the shadows, so they can be hard to prove sometimes. In this particular case, the Giants believe they did their research. We've known about this situation for about a week and a half now. Mm-hmm. The Giants have known about it since May of 2015 and have done their research. And, if there's one guy in New York sports who you can look to and say he's going to try and do the right thing, it's John Mara. And, he's certainly earned the benefit of the doubt with me, from my observations of him over the years, to be given that chance. And, facts may come out later that prove him wrong other accusations or more facts come out and they're able to prove some of these allegations, took place and happened. And then the Giants will have their eggs on their face. But they, as John Mara said, they feel comfortable with the decision now, with all the facts and circumstances that they know of, so they're going to move forward with him, and I expect him to be the kicker in week two.
Yeah, I mean, when you have a brand like the New York Giants and their sole purpose is protecting that brand, you'd have to expect that they did a lot of research before making a decision of that magnitude. But wanted to switch gears here a little bit with you, Tom. So, like I mentioned earlier, Romo's out, reported 6+ weeks. So let's get down to the nitty-gritty here. How many wins do you think it's going to take to win the division this year?
Well, you know, usually it's a 9 or 10 win division because these teams generally beat each other up pretty good. There's very rarely a standout team that kind of sprints through the whole season and wins 12, 13 games. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it's a 9-7, 10-6 season that them winds up winning it. You know, it could come down to two 9-7 teams and a tiebreaker or something like that. There's a lot of closely packed talent on this team. I think there's not a lot of gaps between the top and the bottom. This is probably the closest division, the most competitive division in terms of when you look at the top teams, 1, 2, 3, and 4, how close they are. Mm-hmm. You know, most teams have an outlier. They have a stinker, a team that everybody walks over. The NFC East, I don't think, has that right now. They had a couple of good quarterbacks, and now they're down to maybe two proven ones anyway, in Cousins and Manning. The Cowboys, I think, are still a pretty good team. They see that offensive line. If they can run the ball and Prescott can play at a fraction of how well he's played in the preseason, I think they'll stay above water and try and do some things. They still have Dez Bryant, which is a dangerous threat. I think the Eagles are sort of in a repositioning themselves after a couple of years of that Chip Kelly nonsense. But they're certainly always a dangerous team. And you know, Washington has the weapons and Josh Norman and they could do a lot of things. But you know, the Giants too. I mean, look at how they improved their defense. And I think if you look at last year's team and you say if they could put that kind of offense forward that they did last year and their defense is only a little bit better, they don't have to go from worst to first. They just have to go from worst to middle, worst to medium, you know, worst to 15th, 16th, 14th, something in that range. Mm-hmm. I think you look at their schedule last year, if they had even a competent defense at any point in that season, they would have won 11 games. So I think the Giants are pretty optimistic about their chances to get to that magic number, double-digit wins, and try and win the division.
Newsday Giants reporter Tom Rock is on the line with us on Sports Talk 1240. Tom, I look at the division this year and say this is the best chance the Giants have had to win the division in so long, because you look at the Eagles, they have so many question marks on offense. You look at the Redskins, they had a good year last year, but they're, you know, it's hard for them to go back-to-back years with doing well. I mean, they're just the franchise that's, you know, almost like always in disarray. And you look at the Cowboys now with Tony Romo injured. So to me, it feels like this is the Giants' best chance to win the division in quite some time. What do you think about that?
I'll tell you this. I remember the year that they started 0-6 and they still weren't eliminated by that point. So there's been a couple of years here where the division has just been wide open and nobody's able to run away with it. I think the Giants are positioned, especially now with Romo hurt. I think a lot of people are going to look at the Giants as the favorites in this division, and that's probably a pretty accurate assessment.
Tom, how much do you think a first year head coach helps Jerry Reese with his job security, or do you look at it from the other point of view and say, do you think if the Giants don't make the playoffs this year, which would be 5 years in a row, then Reese is gone?
Well, it all depends on circumstances. I don't think that there's an ultimatum that John Mara has in his mind where they need to get to a certain point. They need to win a playoff game, or they need to get to the playoffs, or they need to do this or that. I think it's a little more of a taste test than that. There's a little more nuance to it than that. You know, if they win 10 games and don't make the playoffs, do you get rid of Reese? I don't know. you know, if you win, you know, if you lose the last game on a last second field goal and you're not in the playoffs and you finish 9-7, does that mean the season was a flop? You know, it's hard to say. You gotta see where you're coming from, which is the two back-to-back, 6-win seasons, and where you wanna go. And listen, the time is running out on Eli Manning. I think everybody understands that his window is closing right now. He's 35 years old. He's still playing every game of the season, but this is the age when quarterbacks start to miss games and injuries start to creep up on them. So everybody's sort of holding their breath waiting for that to happen. And they need to get another couple of playoff runs out of him before his tenure with the Giants is done. I think my belief is that Jerry Reese is probably the second safest employee of the Giants, right behind John Mara as president and CEO, because the Giants just don't make those kind of drastic changes. John Mara believes in Jerry Reese. He believes in the decisions that he makes and the process he goes through. They're gonna change philosophies. They'll be flexible. But I think Jerry Reese is going to be here probably at least as long as Eli Manning is. My guess is that Reese will get to pick the next starting quarterback of the Giants after the Manning era is over, and then where it goes from there, I'll be curious to see, actually.
All right, Tom, real quick here before we let you go, I wanted to get your thoughts on this whole Kaepernick situation. For those of you who don't know, the game the other night, they had the national anthem. He chose to sit in protest because he feels that the African Americans in this country are being oppressed, and he doesn't want to stand for anything that represents a country that doesn't fight for the rights of their people. I know that they had asked Cruz his beliefs on it. He was pretty strong on the issue. What do you think about the NFL's response so far? And do we see any repercussions against Kaepernick because of this?
No, there's not going to be any repercussions because there's no rule, there's no law, there's no nothing. It's just it's a choice, and my belief is that if it's not a choice, if everybody has to stand, if it's mandated that everybody has to stand for the national anthem, then it doesn't mean anything.
Right.
If you need to look in your own heart and decide what you want to do every time that song plays, and for most people that means stand up. But at this point in time, for Kaepernick and for most of his life, I'd imagine he stood up. And just for the last couple of weeks, he's seen what's happening in the country, and he wants to make a little bit of a statement about it and try and change things for the better. And he feels like this is a way he can do that, and that's fine. That's what, you know. I think he has the same freedom that people have to call him a jerk for doing that, and to burn his jersey or whatever they want to do, or scream at him on social media. That's the same right that he's exercising when he doesn't stand up. So when you have a country that's based on freedoms, you run into situations like this a lot of the times, and it gets complicated. You know, none of these issues can be solved in 140 characters, which is how we seem to react to things all too often nowadays. But I personally would like to see everybody stand up, but if he doesn't want to stand up, that's his right. He's welcome to do that as long as he can handle the repercussions.
Absolutely.
Hey, Tom, really appreciate the time.
Thanks, fellas.
Absolutely. Tom Rock covers the New York Giants for Newsday. Does a fantastic job. We're going to take a quick break right now. When we come back, we'll finish up our talk on the Mets. Talk about that interview, talk about the Jets and Giants preview, and get into the Little League World Series. A team from New York won and snapped the streak that the U.S. hasn't won the World Series in 5 years since 2011. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gustbuster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit Gustbuster.com and get your Gustbuster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
Sports Talk 1240, Kyle Gelling and Eric Getzoff here. Just had a very interesting interview with Tom Rock of Newsday. He covers the New York Giants. Had some pretty good takes on where the team is headed and how the division's stacking up. What do you think about his thoughts on where the Giants are headed in the division?
It's kind of everything we know. I mean, here's what I think of the Giants and the Jets this season. In the NFL, you have five teams that you know are going to have at least 10 wins. Five teams are going to have at most 6 wins, and then you have the remaining 22 teams that are anywhere in between, and the Jets and Giants are both in that same boat. With the Giants, you know, there's a lot of question marks with their offensive line. If you don't have a good offensive line in football, it's really hard to go anywhere unless your defense is amazing, unless your receivers are unbelievable, which Beckham is, but they don't have a second amazing wide receiver. So, you know, there's a big worry for the Giants in terms of their offensive line.
I agree. At the same time, I think that they have a little bit more wiggle room to figure out who they are as a team and where they're going to go for the season, whereas I guess the Jets have a little bit more leeway this season with Brady being out until, week 4?
Yes.
But even then, that's not even guaranteed because we've seen in the past, I mean, Castle stepped in for him and all of a sudden, death taxes and 11 wins. That's pretty much what the Patriots do. So, they're going to have a tough road ahead. I think the Jets are going to have a tougher road than the Giants, but we're just going to have to wait and see.
Absolutely. Something with the Giants too. I have zero confidence, absolutely zero, that Victor Cruz will be the same player that he once was. I mean, the guy, this happened, I remember the date. It was like October 20th, 2014 against the Eagles. It was a Sunday night football game, and both teams, I think, were 3-2 or 3-3 at the time. And Cruz, I remember, he just went down. And that was October 2014. We're now in August of 2016. If Cruz can't get back to the same player he was, 22 months later, then I don't think he ever will be. And, Tom was saying, it'll probably be like the preseason game last night where they'll throw him a couple balls over the middle, but he's not going to be that playmaker receiver. And you know what? That's fine. It's better than no Cruz, but Giants fans do not expect to see the old Victor Cruz out there, to me, for the rest of his career.
Yeah, I think it was a little eye-opening for him to say that he's not the player he once was, and that they're still going to be pushing him 100% in practice. I mean, I understand he's not quote unquote a veteran because this is only his fifth year in the league, but if you know you have a guy with that much potential of talent and this is his first season back after two consecutive years of being injured, why put him through the rigmarole of practice 100%? I mean, you have Adrian Peterson comes back from the ACL. They're doing different things with him to try to keep him on the field, and he rushes for over 2,000 yards. Like, you need to craft your practices for your players.
Yeah. And you played football, too. That's what a lot of coaches do, correct? I don't have the background in football.
Yeah, I mean, they try to keep the players' legs fresh as much as they can, especially in the NFL. I think, you know, they get 2 days off after the Sunday. Mm-hmm. Wednesday's like a walk, you know, walk through with shorts type thing. There isn't much full contact, but, I mean, they're going 100 miles an hour, you know, grown men running into each other. So they need a little bit more rest, especially for injury's sake. So we'll see.
And I think Jerry Reese went into the draft knowing that Victor Cruz is not going to be the same player that he once was, or at least has an idea. So he was trying to, you know, cover his own ass in the process, and therefore he drafted Sterling Shepard, a wide receiver from Oklahoma, who reports so far in preseason say that he's been really good. So he can emerge as kind of like a number two wide receiver. So, you know, we'll see what happens. And defense, the Giants had a – their defense was good last year up until certain points of the game. I mean, there were a couple seasons, especially a couple games, especially late in the season last year, where the Giants just gave up like 45 points, you know, the New Orleans game. The Carolina game, the Minnesota game. But besides that, the Giants' defense didn't play bad until the end of most games. And you know what? They brought in three guys from free agency, two defensive linemen and a cornerback. Guy from the Dolphins, the Jets, and the Rams. And reports, you know, people were saying that the Giants did overpay for them, but it, you know, they're really good players, and it was worth the signing. So the defense, in my opinion, has improved a little bit. The offense, you know, to me, it just comes back down to the offensive line. If the offensive line's not going to be there, I don't know how successful the offense really is going to be.
Yeah, everything in this league is about timing, and if you could have the greatest quarterback in the world, unless he's releasing that ball immediately on the snap, there's nothing you could do about it. I mean, you have to have some sort of protection, unless you're going to have a mobile quarterback that's going to be outside the pocket, and Eli Manning is not a mobile quarterback. So they're going to have to figure something out to get him a little bit more time. If that's play action more frequently, if that's running screens to try to slow down the rush, they're going to have to try to do something to give him a little bit more time.
What's your, you know, gut prediction? Obviously, you can look a little bit more into it as, you know, as we approach the season, which is right now a little bit less than 2 weeks away. Gut reaction for the Giants, how many wins do you think this year?
I think 9 wins would be a pretty comfortable bet I'd be willing to make. Anything more than that, they're out of division schedule. There's not really many gimmies there. Even teams that once were kind of a layup. I mean, you have the Browns. You really don't know what you're going to get there. Like, RG3 could just have a great game at one point if he's still healthy and take off. So I think 9 is a pretty good number. 10 might get it for you. So
yeah, I think 9 would too.
9's in the hunt, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to go 8. I'm going to say they're 8-8 this season, which is a vast improvement from last year, the year before, and the year before that. Yeah, I'm going to go 8-8. And looking at how the division is this year, 8-8 might be enough to win the division because, again, the Eagles have so many question marks on offense. The Redskins, if they can produce back-to-back good seasons, that's good, but they've yet to prove they can. And the Cowboys, I saw the stat with Tony Romo in Dallas. When Tony Romo's played the last two seasons, I think the Cowboys are like something four. I'm going to look this stat up, but I think it's about 14-3. But when Tony Romo doesn't play over the last three seasons, they're like 1-12. So without Romo, I don't give them a fighting chance.
Yeah, you would think with a quarterback that's more injury prone that they would have gone out and gotten a big time backup quarterback. You see this on a ton of teams where they go out and they get a veteran who you know is going to come in and be able to get you at least a chance at winning, not a rookie in Prescott or they had Whedon last year. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're the Dallas Cowboys and you're putting a product on the field every week, you have to have some sort of backup, knowing that your quarterback has back and neck issues.
And the actual stat was the Cowboys are 23-11, averaging 28 points per game over the last 3 years with Romo. Without Romo, over the last 3 years, 1-13, wow. 16.4 points per game. So that's a huge difference. Yeah, I don't give Dallas a shot. Let's transition over to the Jets a little bit. Good season last year, 10-6. You know, they re-signed Fitzpatrick. Didn't really make that many changes. Brought in Forte. Lost Damon Harrison to the Jets. To the Giants. What are your initial thoughts on the Jets this season?
They're built to contend. I mean, they're a ground and pound team with a great defense. I like Fitzpatrick as a quarterback. Do I think he could put up the numbers he put up last season? That was career numbers for him last year. So unless he's figured something out with the Jets offense, I can't see him doing that. Because you kind of saw him as, you know, the playoffs were on the line there. He kind of reverted back to the, you know, the old Fitzpatrick that everyone knows, and he threw those interceptions. But I think if they run the ball, it's all about time of possession, and they play solid defense that they showed they could play last night. I think they have a pretty good shot at finally competing with the Patriots, especially with Brady being out for those first couple games.
Yeah, you're a Packer fan.
I am.
Yeah, I'm a Giant fan, so think I'm not a Mets and Jets fan. But I really feel bad for Jets fans because over the last 2016, so Brady took over in 2001. Over the last 15 years, it's almost like the Jets go into the season not even just hoping they can, like, you know, this is their chance to go all the way, but just, like, hoping that this is the year that they can win the division. They haven't won the division since 2002. They haven't hosted a playoff game since 2002, and it's crazy. So with the Jets, the question's not really, like, is this our year we can go all the way? It's, you know, this year Tom Brady is out for 4 years. Maybe this is the year we can finally win the division. And honestly, I think that the Jets have as good of a roster they've ever had. Talking about late 60s, talking about the 98 team. But in the last 15 years, I think this is the best roster they've really ever had. You bring in Forte. The defense was phenomenal last year. The big thing for the Jets is, I know this is like a simple thing to say, and a lot of the analysts say this, but it's just don't turn the ball over, because then you give yourself less of a shot to win. So it's time of possession. Don't turn the ball over and play good defense. And I think that the Jets will... Honestly, my opinion on the Jets, I say 11 wins.
Yep, it's not outside the realm of possibilities. You saw that they went to back-to-back AFC championships with Mark Sanchez as their quarterback.
Right.
So if they can do it with Mark Sanchez as their quarterback, why can't they do it with Ryan Fitzpatrick? I mean, my dad's a Jets fan here. I'm sure he'd love to see a Super Bowl that involves the Jets that wasn't Super Bowl III. So if they can at least get in, I think that they have a good shot of playing with anyone.
Yeah. Are you doing fantasy this year?
I'm not doing fantasy this year. Last year, it really got away from me. I was doing school and work. I didn't set my roster. I actually did not have a single win until the last game of the season.
So really?
I bowed out.
You didn't pay attention,
year.
Though.
No, I didn't.
All right. But you know what? The reason I ask is because a lot of people I've talked to, like, just aren't doing fantasy this year. And I wanted to bring up this conversation because a lot of people feel that the NFL is drifting more towards caring about the players, and it's all about fantasy, all about DraftKings, all about FanDuel. And a couple of people I've talked to are, you know, they're doing, like, a Survivor League, or they're doing Pick'em Only instead of fantasy, because they actually want to watch the games to care as a fan instead of only caring about the players. And it seems that the NFL over the past like 3-4 years has really moved from all about the history of the teams and, you know, caring about the teams to now caring a lot about marketing of the players.
Yeah, there's a huge push for that, and that's across all sports. I mean, yeah. They have people playing fantasy basketball. I can't think of anything worse than playing fantasy basketball at that point. I mean, even baseball, it's like you can set your weekly, so like that's fine. But basketball, I just can't wrap my head around. They're trying to market the league towards the players. I mean, it's not – the Dallas Cowboys aren't America's team anymore as much as they try to push that they are. It's all about the face of the league, and they try to have almost a new face every year. I mean, you saw it last year. Cam Newton really stepped out as the face of – the NFL, you know, MVP. Before that, Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. Now Manning's retired. Who's it going to be this season? We'll have to wait to see.
You bring up the point with baseball, too. And a lot of people have said over the past, you know, couple years that baseball has as many great young players as they've ever had. That may be true, but it also may be because baseball has done an amazing job marketing those players, you know? So... And I'm seeing it not just in the NFL, not just in MLB, but in the NBA and NHL too. So it's drifting a lot more towards from the teams to the players. So that's a big, it's a big switch in sports across all platforms.
Yeah, I think that especially baseball. The only anomaly there is that Mike Trout isn't considered the face of the league. I guess it's because he's a West Coast guy and it's more geared towards Harper. But you could. I mean, they're pushing players left and right. It's all about the player, not really about the team, because they change so frequently. And that might be why you see it in the NFL. They're they're starting to shift more towards the structure of contracts like Major League Baseball, and they're expecting players to be changing teams left and right. So you follow a player, you don't follow the team.
Let's get off the football talk for a second. We're going to get back to baseball. The Yankees with Gary Sanchez. I mean, how unbelievable is this? And the guy, it's not just the home runs, but he's batting over 400 also.
Yeah, and you compare it to Trevor Story, who started the season with the Rockies, hit 10 home runs and set the record with the Rockies to start the season in the first month. Now, that's Trevor Story playing in Colorado at the beginning of the season with pitchers who are not in midseason form. Then you take a person like Sanchez, who's playing in the dog days of summer against teams that are in the playoff hunt, and he's still putting this together. It is unbelievable to see.
It's amazing. And my dad brought up a good point, too. It's almost like the Yankees kind of find these guys, too. Gary Sanchez comes out. You know, Travis Darno with the Mets. Come on. The guy can't even stay healthy.
Yeah, it drives me crazy. It took the Mets 3 years to rebuild, and it took the Yankees 2 months.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as A-Rod was gone, all of a sudden they bring up Judge. They have Sanchez. Didi starts playing well. It's just like they just took off.
It's the Yankees' luck. That's how it works. And you saw that with the Red Sox, too. The Red Sox actually, you know, they signed a bunch of free agents back in the early part of this decade, and they traded a bunch of those guys. They traded away Adrian Gonzalez. They traded Josh Beckett, and they kind of retooled from the farm system. You're seeing everyone come up now, and you're seeing the Yankees now copying what the Red Sox did because a lot of great players aren't hitting free agency anymore. So you got to build from the system.
Mm-hmm. Do you see them being a wild card contender? I mean, they're 3.5 back. They've just put a beating on the Orioles the past two games. I think they scored 14 and 13 runs in those two games. Do you think they have a shot if they can put something together here?
I don't. I don't think they have enough pitching. That's the thing.
Yeah. I mean, Tanaka's been a mainstay for them. He's not the strikeout pitcher that he was. I think they're going to bring him back, definitely. But after that, it's kind of a merry-go-round.
Yeah, and the bullpen's just not there, too.
Yeah, I mean, who would have thought we'd be saying that at this point, but yeah. I mean, when you trade everyone away, what are you going to do?
And it's crazy also because the guys that they got for Andrew Miller and Chapman, I mean, Chad Green's in the starting, you know, starting pitcher for the team right now, but most of the guys are in the farm system, the great guys that they got. So let's say they didn't trade Andrew Miller and they didn't trade Aroldis Chapman. They'd be on the team right now. I think that team would be really, really good. Yeah?
Yeah, I think that they would be throwing a wrench into a lot of other teams' plans, that's for sure. Chapman's unbelievable, what he's been doing, even in Chicago. I mean, guy doesn't miss a step. I guess when you throw 103, it really doesn't matter. But they went out and they... In my opinion, the Yankees did the right thing. They decided to cut ties this season. You had a bunch of people who weren't going to be around in the future anyway, and they went and they got some very good players that are going to be coming up in the next year or two.
Yeah, very good. And not to mention Greg Bird also next season.
Yep.
So you got Greg Bird, Didi Gregorius, Castro will be on the team next year. I'm sure Bird will play first. And then in the outfield, you got Aaron Judge.
Ellsbury,
and you know, maybe trade Gardner, see what happens. And then starting at catcher, you have Gary Sanchez, and they still have three or four really good high prospects in the minor leagues. So it's almost as if the Yankees kind of did what the Red Sox did. Maybe had like a, you know, this year, let's say they don't make the playoffs. If they do, all the kudos to them, but I don't think they will. Let's say next year they don't do good, so they missed a year and a half, then they just rebuild and they start for the future in 2018.
Yeah, because last year all they had to hang their hat on was that they made the wild card, and They and everyone else knew it wasn't going much further than that anyway with the team they were putting out there. So, yeah, it's something nice to say that you made it to the wild card game and everything like that, but I think they'd rather be contenders for the next 5 years than just make it to the wild card.
You know who's been really hot for the Mets, too? We didn't talk about this, but Jose Reyes. He's been on fire.
Yeah, I mean, every time I looked at his average, I couldn't believe it because every game I watched, he was hitting doubles and triples. Like, he didn't have a single that I saw for a five-game stretch. All he did was have extra base hits. And not even that. It's not that he's even hitting the ball better. Just walks. When he gets on base, it's a totally different ballgame.
Yep.
He looks and is playing like he did when he was first with the Mets. Right towards the end of that run with the Mets in 2006 or so, you could tell he was all about the money. He was, you know, he was dogging it down the line. He really wasn't hustling like we were used to seeing. And then he gets, you know, he goes away, he gets his money, and now he's back, and he's playing for his contract, and he's mm-hmm. playing to be in New York, and the hustle's there again, and he's having fun with it.
Yep, and that's the biggest thing, too. Listen, if the Mets are at full strength, I really think they can make a run. But knowing the Mets' luck, it's just like, you know, the cynicism comes out of me right now where I don't think that the Mets are going to stay healthy because as soon as something good happened today, Cabrera went down.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Full disclosure, I pulled the plug on it probably 3 weeks ago. It just, the writing was on the wall. Mm-hmm. If I'd love to be proven wrong there, but it just seems like it's not there this season. I mean, it was almost a flip-flop. This was supposed to be the year that they really made that jump and started blowing teams out of the water, and last season was supposed to be like the build-up year, but it seemed like injuries will do that to you.
And it's just annoying also because I was thinking about this the other day. What would you consider the New York Mets' golden age to be? The mid-80s?
No time when me or you were alive.
Definitely not.
I've never seen it, so I wouldn't know what it looks like.
Yeah.
I guess it would be 85, 86, 87,
yeah.
88, and then that was it.
Probably it.
One championship.
Yeah, one championship. Maybe 99, 2000, 98, one. You talk about that, but probably the mid-2000s when they won the championship.
Yeah,
I would just like to see the Mets go two straight years going deep into the playoffs. Like, I saw that. What was I? I was 7, 8 years old. You're around the same age in 99, 2000. I just want to see that as a teenager where the Mets were good. You know, they were great last year. I want to see another good season this year. But you know what? It's just it's annoying because the Mets' luck comes back to haunt them. The pitching doesn't – you know, the pitching, the one thing that the Mets really were counting on this year, they fall apart. Harvey doesn't – you know, Harvey has a bad season. Syndergaard really doesn't perform the way that he did all of last season. Mats, you know, Mats has had a lot of questionable starts this year.
You know what? His start to the season, he was Rookie of the Year candidate, and he was getting that award. And then, you know, a couple of bad starts here and there, sprinkled in some injuries and some missed starts. It's hard to get into a groove when you're not pitching consistently every week. And until he gets to that point, I don't know if it's his throwing regimen or what. It might just be that he's injury prone. But they need to figure out what they're going to do with him at this point because you don't trade him. Definitely not,
no.
But I think that they need to get into a workout situation where maybe he's not overexerting himself in the offseason because it seems to be making it worse.
And it just goes to show you, too, how fragile pitchers are. Because going into the season, everyone was saying the Mets had 6 good starting pitchers to start the season. And then you talk about Zach Wheeler, that'd be 7. But you see, you know, you saw it happen with Steven Matz. You saw what happened with Zach Wheeler. You saw what happened with Matt Harvey. So the promise was there. Did they come through? No, and it's really tough being a starting pitcher in this day and age because unless you're really, really healthy, you're not going to get that big contract.
Yeah, and unless you're built like Madison Bumgarner who just goes out and throws as many innings and it doesn't seem to affect him at all, he's the outlier in this generation, so they you know, can't expect it.
Clayton Kershaw, too.
Yeah.
He started off the season
absolutely.
One of the best pitchers, you know, not just all of baseball this season, but, you know, he was setting a lot of records. His WAR number was way up there.
Yeah.
And he was just amazing. And, I mean, has he pitched? Has he come back yet?
No,
I don't think he has.
Nope.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. So it can happen to any pitcher at any time. And it seems to happen to pitchers a lot more so hitters in this day and age in baseball.
Absolutely.
Yep. So I want to give a quick shout out to the listeners. This will be my last show. I'm actually going up to graduate school in Boston. So I've been on the airwaves since August of 2014. If I'm back for a weekend, I'd love to host. You know, we'll see what happens with that. But thank you for listening to me for this time. Kyle, second show with me. Thank you for coming back
thanks
on.
Thanks for having me. Congrats and good luck up in Beantown.
Absolutely.
Don't call it that, though. They hate it.
I won't. Yeah, everybody take care. Had a great show. Thank you to Tom Rock for coming on. Big thank you to our executive producer, Rob Kowal, and to the engineer behind the glass, clicking all the buttons and making the show go smooth, which is Brian Graves. Thanks, everyone. Have a great rest of the night.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.